This morning I was sitting in the kitchen and I was going over my notes for this morning, and my son, he's 2 years old, walked into the kitchen. He walked directly over to the cabinets. He opened one of the drawers. He picked out the blue box of cereal, not the purple box of cereal. They look very similar, but they are different. He took the box. He went over to the counter. He took his little step stool that we have for him. He put it against the counter. He climbed up onto the counter, put the box there, crawled over to the other cabinets, opened it up, took a plastic bowl out. He pressed the button on the kettle that was filled with water to warm it up. It's the water for mixing with the cereal. And then he took the little bag out of the cereal box and he poured it into his bowl. And then he spilled a whole bunch on the floor. And then he put it back in. And then he came back out. He stood on his little step stool right by the bowl that was on the counter. And he looked at me all without saying a word. Just like always. Every single day. Same thing. Same routine. If you mess with the routine, you mess with the day. If you want to start the day off on kind of rough footing, then you mess with something. Like take the bowls out of the cabinet so that when he goes to look for it, it's not there. That's how you start the day on bad footing. There is a routine that he likes, a routine that's predictable, a routine that makes him feel good about starting the day. That's what happened today. That's what happened yesterday. It's what happened the day before. That's what's going to happen tomorrow. You and I, friends, are addicts. We have a drug that we crave, that we long for, that we can't get enough of. We plan our days around it. We want more and more, and if it's not there, it makes us feel insecure. It makes us feel vulnerable, and our drug is predictability. We love it. Our brains work around predictability. Maybe all of us in little different ways, and we have different routines and different things that kind of trigger that in our minds, but we all have something in us that loves predictability, that loves routine, that loves habits. And whatever those are for you, they are powerful. And a huge chunk of your world, of your life, of the results that you're getting in life are based on the kind of habits, the kind of routines that you have day in and day out. Duke University did a study a number of years ago, and they studied the things that we do every day, the actions that we perform, and they found this, that up to 40%, and there are other studies that suggest it's higher than that, but around 40% of the actions that you perform each and every day are not a result of the decisions that you make, they are a result of the habits that you have forged. Which means this, that almost half of what you do every day, and depending on who you listen to, maybe it's a little more than half, but a huge chunk of what you do every day is not a result of you sitting there thinking, okay, now what am I going to do? I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do that, and do I do this one or that one? I'm going to choose it. But almost half of what you do, or maybe a little bit more, depending on who you listen to, is a result of habits that you've already forged. That there's a huge percentage of your life that you've put on autopilot, which is important because your brain is actually freeing up space to make decisions about more important things or more unfamiliar things, and it has created loops to say, this is just what we do. So if you are a coffee drinker, then most likely this morning you didn't wake up and walk to the kitchen and go, oh, well, let's see here. What am I going to have to drink today? You just made the coffee. And probably you made the coffee the same for you as you made it yesterday. You put the generally speaking, the same amount of cream or milk or sugar or none of those things, but you've already decided on that, and you did what you do each and every day. When you go to work, you probably take the same way of getting there that you did last week, the same way of getting home. You've got routines around those things. Your routines make you feel comfortable with your life. You know that whether you walk or take the bus or drive, that there's certain milestones that help you predict whether or not you're going to be on time. If I get to the bus stop at this time and get this bus, I'll get to campus at this time and I'll be there in plenty of time. If I leave my house at this time and get in the car and drive this route, I know I'm going to get to work before it's supposed to start. It's a routine and you stop thinking about it because you don't need to. You have habits around those things, and we're addicts. We love our habits over and over and over. We have our habits in all areas of life. As we're talking about home is hard, we have habits at home. We have habits in our marriage, habits in our relationship, if we're dating or if we're single, and sometimes we're dating, we have habits around the kind of people we date and how we date. We have habits with our partners around how we treat each other, how we talk to each other, how we spend time together, the vacations that we take together. In our marriages, we have habits, whether we call them out or don't call them out, whether we think about them or not. In our parenting, when it comes to disciplining our kids, spending time with our kids, bedtime with our kids, mealtime with our kids, we have habits, whether we think about them or not. In our financial lives, we have habits, whether they have come as a result of us being on purpose or not on purpose. Every time we get a paycheck, we have habits about what we do with our money. We are people, creatures of habit. And here's why it's so important to think about. Because if it's true that somewhere in the 40% range of things that we do every single day are the result of habits, not necessarily conscious choices, decisions, but habits, then a huge part of the results that you and I are getting in our lives, relationally, maritally, financially, as parents, all that kind of stuff, a huge part of the results that we're getting in our lives, the reason our lives look the way they do right now is because of our habits. So I want to talk about our habits. I want to talk about the habits that we have, and I want to encourage you today to think well about your habits and maybe to start some new ones, maybe to stop some today, and to think about the kind of results. Last week we were talking about values, the kind of values and results that you want to show up in your life, and then to ask yourself, now where are my habits taking me? The things that I don't always think about, the things that are on autopilot in our lives. Some of our habits are really good. Some of them are not so good. Some of them are on autopilot. Give you a couple of examples. Some of you woke up this morning and the first thing that you did is you checked Instagram. Here's how habits work, by the way. Charles Duhigg wrote a book a few years ago on this, and it's just been widely read, and he looked into the studies around what's happening in our brains when we're forging habits and those pathways in the brain that are created that just really allow those habits to sink in. And here's what he noticed. There's a loop that we go around and around in our habits. It starts with a trigger. Something triggers in us. So for a lot of us in our culture, it's being bored for 3 seconds. And we can't handle that. That's a trigger for us. And so our trigger leads to an action. We take out our phone because how could we possibly have 3 seconds of silence go by without being distracted by something? And we look at our Instagram because we're bored. And then we see that 10 more people have liked our last post than the last time we checked. And we get a reward. Our brain gives us a little hit of you know, kind of that dopamine or whatever. It just goes, oh, yeah, that's good. People like me. People approve of me. So here's how habits work. It starts with a trigger. And then that leads to an action, something that we do that we're trying to get a reward from. And when we get a reward, that is our brain telling us, bam, yes, we've accomplished something. And so now we're going to forge this little habit because every time that we get that trigger and we do that thing, we get something good out of it. And the more that we follow the trigger with the action and get the reward, the more that sinks into us and we start to build habits that we can stop thinking about, because now every time I'm bored, I can take out my phone and I can look at Instagram and hopefully I get that just shot that makes me feel a little bit good, and then we go back. All kinds of triggers, all kinds of actions, all kinds of rewards. For some of us, it's passing the fridge. Can't pass the fridge without opening the fridge. Oh, I see what's in there. I take something, I eat it, I feel good. Now I've got another trigger and an action and a reward. For some of us, we're trying to parent. And we go into the grocery store, and our kid wants a cookie, and they have a meltdown. And we look around, and all of a sudden, we're embarrassed because we're in public, and our kid is melting down. It's a trigger. I need to do something. And so we say, hey, kid, stop it. And then that doesn't work because, like, brilliant parenting, but it doesn't work. How come this didn't work? And so we say, okay, now I'm going to raise my voice. I'm going to be a little louder. Kid, stop it. You're embarrassing me. And that doesn't work either. And the kid's going, I want a cookie. I want a cookie. I want a cookie. And so we go, fine, here's a cookie. And then they stop freaking out. Reward. We go, oh, the kid stopped. And so the next time we're in the grocery store and the kid acts out a little bit and we go, I know that I should, you know, there's these certain words I should say and I should talk to them about their feelings and, oh, are you frustrated? That sounds frustrating to me too. And you know, I should go through the whole thing. But your brain's already going. But if you just give a cookie, bam, reward. So bam, cookie, reward. Whoo, calms down. But then all of a sudden your kid is freaking out all the time and you don't have enough cookies to stop them from freaking out. But that's the reward. And all of a sudden you have a habit and then you start thinking decision-wise, this probably wasn't the best thing to do as a parent. But I had a trigger. I did an action. I got a reward. And so now we're in a habit. And by the way, now the kid's in the habit. What's that? Trigger. I want a cookie. Action. I freak out. Reward. I get a cookie. What do I do next time I want a cookie? Freak out because I got a habit. And we start to build these habits in our lives. And again, we do them relationally. For some of us, it's dating relationships. And we've seen the same habits even with different people over and over and over. Because if I have this feeling of emptiness, if I do this, I get someone to be with. Could be in our marriage, and could be in our finances, could be with our families, parents, all that kind of stuff. But this is how our brains work. So important, because now we need to think through, okay, if that's the loop that's happening, that's being forged in my brain, I need to start thinking about my habits. What do I want my habits to be? What do I want the rewards to be? What are those things leading us to? Because home is hard. And whatever's happening at home, we need to realize that sometimes if we keep some of the habits that we're not thinking through, they're accidental habits, they're rewards, but not always leading us to the greatest rewards that we want. Maybe we need to stop and go, okay, maybe my habits need to change. Here's the wonderful, beautiful, hopeful part. We can actually change our habits. We can interrupt this process, and we can actually run it and forge new habits that we want in our lives. And so whether it's our coffee consumption or our Instagram, whether it's parenting, whether it's the way that we treat our spouse, whether it's the way that we're dating and all that kind of stuff, when we can stop and look, what are our triggers and what should our actions be and what are the rewards that we're looking for, we have the power to change some of those things. That's what I want to talk about today. And think about this. If you think about where you're at in life right now, just ask yourself, are there results that you're getting that you wish you weren't getting that are results of your habits drifting? Because I think that's true for most of us. So when you were dating, and maybe you were working towards marriage, or maybe that's where you're at now, and you felt this incredible attraction and intimacy and closeness with the person that you were going to marry or that you were dating, and everything was great, probably at some point, somebody tried to warn you that you're not always going to feel that way, and there's going to be tough times that come, and all that kind of stuff. And you probably said, not us! Our love is different than your love. We are madly deeply in love, and our passion will never dwindle, and the candle will never flicker, and we're different. No, yeah, I get you've been married for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and for you that's going to happen, but it's never going to happen for us. And then maybe you're in that place 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the road, and you go, oh, it really doesn't feel like it used to. And you have these conversations. How come we're not that close? And it's not just those feelings because, you know, yeah, maybe expectations need to change. But, man, we really have drifted apart. And we don't spend as much time together. And we don't feel all that close together. And you really think about that. And you go, man, think about the habits we had when we were dating. And now think about our habits today as a married couple. What's changed? What's different? Now, part of that is expectations change because life changed. And maybe kids come along and careers and all that. But just think about it. The habits that we're creating inside of you, this incredible intimacy, and now, have your habits drifted? And I'm not saying you have to go back to feeling exactly how you were dating, because that's probably not realistic, but in new phases and all that kind of stuff, how are we building habits that drive us to intimacy and joy and togetherness? Or have we missed it? Think about, and this is an example for sure, where our habits just drift and our expectations certainly need to change. But now that I'm a veteran of having two kids, because our second is 3 weeks old, I feel like I can speak wisdom into this. When you get pregnant for the first time and you go, man, our kid is only going to eat organic and there's going to be no screen time and we're going to read, you know, a billion books a day and all this kind of stuff. And so you set out on that. And then by the time you have a second kid or a third kid, you're walking around the house trying to figure anything out. And there's your first kid sitting in front of the screen eating dirt off their shoe. And you go, hey, we're all alive. We're all breathing. Things are happening. I get expectations change, people. Sometimes we go into these things naively. But think about this. What are our habits? What are your parenting habits? What are your financial habits? What are your marital habits? What are your dating habits? And where are they leading you? Because even if some of those things are naive and we change our expectations, this is the process that's going on in our brain. And we have the power to step in and say, are the habits that make up a huge chunk of what I do every day and therefore the results in a huge way of my life. What are the habits that I have? And that's what I want us to think through today. Last week we talked about turning our values into decisions. Turn your values into decisions. So I wanted you to start thinking about what do you really value, what's most important to you, because you need to start making decisions based on that because you want your life to revolve around the things that you truly value that are truly important in life. Now today what I want to do is take it one step further and talk about turn your decisions into habits, because habits eat decisions for breakfast. As we've looked at, it's one thing to say, I have a decision that I'm making. It's another thing to turn that decision into a habit and to multiply that decision over and over and over, and therefore to get exponential results. And that's what I want us to experience, is those exponential results, to say, let's not just do something good one time. Let's figure out a way to make those good things habits. And so we play the long game in saying that the fruit we're going to see in our lives is not just going to be, I'll make one decision and tomorrow my life will be better, but one decision turned into a habit, part of my life that I don't even always think about maybe, that years down the road is going to benefit me in incredible ways. That is the power of habits. So today I want you to think about turning your decisions into habits. I want to go through a story and give you an example of someone in the scriptures who has such a strong value system, and then we see that he was able to build on his value decisions that became habits that completely transformed the way that he lived in a super, super powerful way. And look at that. We're looking at Daniel. We're going to be in Daniel chapter 6. The book of Daniel, if you're looking for it in your Bible, it's probably about two-thirds of the way through. It's in the Old Testament. Incredible story, and it's a story of when the Israelites had been conquered by the Babylonians, and a bunch of them had been taken out of their homeland into exile, into Babylon. And so the Babylonians took a whole bunch of really bright people, some of the best of the best of the Israelites, and brought them to Babylon. They had conquered their people, sort of taken over. And Daniel has now been taken with a bunch of other people into exile, into Babylon, which means he's living in a foreign place where they're politics were different, religions were different, where his people were basically put into a form of slavery again, and he's trying to figure out his life. So this is not a comfortable situation in his life necessarily. It's not easy. There's a ton of challenges, and we pick up the story, Daniel chapter 6, verse 1. It pleased Darius. Darius was the king in Babylon, to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be throughout the whole kingdom, and over them three high officials, of whom Daniel was one, to whom these satraps should give an account, so that the king might suffer no loss. Then this Daniel became distinguished above all the other high officials and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Then the high officials and the satraps sought to find a ground for complaint against Daniel with regard to the kingdom. But they could find no ground for complaint or any fault, because he was faithful, and no error or fault was found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God." Okay, notice something here just in those five verses. In the first four, we read about the satraps, the high officials, the satraps, the high officials, the satraps. It's repeated language over and over and over. We're going to get a couple of more references afterwards. It's, if you're writing, almost awkward, like you would say, can we use a pronoun or something? But over and over, we just read the satraps, 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 the high officials, the satraps, the high officials, the satraps. It is giving us a little bit of a clue of what's going on in this story. This is a power struggle. So that's why we have the names written over and over and over, the titles. Satraps, high officials, satraps, high officials. Why? Power struggle. So here's who the satraps are. They are provincial governors. So Darius has put 120 of them in charge so that he doesn't get any loss. You see this. They are in charge of making sure that the king gets what he wants. They're provincial governors. So kind of break up the geography and say, great, we're going to set all these guys up in charge, each of their own little area. That word satraps comes linguistically from a phrase that means protectors of the province. That's their job. Protect Babylon, protect the king's interests, protect the king's value system. We're going back to values now, right? Your job is to protect the values of our kingdom, of Babylon, of Darius. That's what you're supposed to do. So that's who they are. They are Babylon. They represent Babylon. They value Babylon. That is their job. And then we see that pretty quickly they see somebody who's not Babylon, Daniel, Israelite. He doesn't really fit in here for whatever reason. He's rising in the ranks. It says he has an excellent spirit. He's standing out as a leader. The king is planning to promote him. He's already a high official. They're obviously jealous. They don't like him. And so they say, we got to figure out a way to get him out of here. But he's doing such a good job. So we can't just find something that he's doing bad at. He's doing really good. And so they go for where they know that they can hit Daniel. They go for what he values most. They attack Daniel right at the core of who his God is. We have nothing that we can come against him in the job that he's doing. So let's attack him in his value system. See that in verse 5. Unless we find it in connection with the law of his God. As they scheme to defeat him, they go for what he values most, his God. What we have set up is a power play. Who's going to win out? Babylon? Daniel. And bigger than Daniel, Daniel's God. Verse 6. Then these high officials and satraps, we're getting this right now. You know who they are? Oh, we're important. We're high officials. We're satraps. Came by agreement to the king and said to him, O King Darius, live forever. All the high officials of the kingdom, okay, we get it, high officials, the prefects and the satraps, the counselors and the governors, all the leaders are agreed that the king should establish an ordinance and enforce an injunction that whoever makes petition to any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it can be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked. Therefore, King Darius signed the document and injunction. Hey, king, let's make sure that everybody is an ally. They're swearing their allegiance to you, to Babylon. Because guess who's not going to do that? Daniel. We're going to get him. Power struggle. Value struggle. Let's make sure everybody is worshiping the king. That everybody is for Babylon. And if not, we'll throw them in a lion's den. Now, this is a pretty popular Bible story. If you grew up in church, you probably at some point heard this in Sunday school or service or something like that. It's Daniel in the lion's den. Daniel's going to get thrown in with lions. We get it. And on one level, it's, hey, Daniel's going to get thrown into a very dangerous place, and we'll see what God can do. There is a deeper level to this story that we need to get. Remember, all these guys, these leaders, represent Babylon. There is a people, the Israelites, who have been conquered by Babylon, and there's a power struggle going on. Who is going to win? God and his people, the enemy Babylon, and their people. They set this whole thing up so that they can throw Daniel into a lion's den. If you study lions in ancient Babylon, and actually today in modern day Iraq, lions are a symbol for Babylon. They are a symbol, and were a symbol that represented the king, and a symbol of their goddess Ishtar, who was the goddess of fertility, love, and war. Lions in this story are very symbolic. Lions are Babylon. And throwing Daniel into a lion's den, yeah, it's for Daniel, but it's also meant to instill fear in enemies. Who's the real lion? Darius, the king. And if you mess with Darius, you will be destroyed. He will maul you like a lion. And who does Darius represent? He represents Babylon and all of Babylon's values and their system. If you go against Babylon, you will be destroyed by Babylon. We are the superpower. Be afraid of us. Pledge your allegiance to Babylon, or Babylon will destroy you. You can actually see archaeologists, even relatively recently, found that there were different gates coming into the city, and they have these artwork, these tiles that are painted, and alongside them there's other things, but there's these pictures of lions. There's these huge sculptures of lions over top of humans. Lions are Babylon, the value system of Babylon. If you go against Babylon, you will be mauled by Babylon. So when they're putting this in here, make no mistake, this is why this story probably makes the Bible. Because Israel has been conquered by Babylon. Daniel's now in Babylon. They're all wondering, is this it for us? Is this our story? Is this how it ends? is God abandoning us into exile and we're going to lose everything. And so here's Daniel. He is a stand-in for his Hebrew brothers and sisters. And they're going to throw him literally to the lions, to the Babylonians. And they're going to say, what's going to happen? Because in the story, of course, you expect that the lion mauls the person, that Babylon overcomes the Israelites. They win. The story that we're expecting. It's how it's set up. It's an obvious attempt to make Daniel declare his ultimate allegiance. And the message is, fear the king, submit to the king. He is a fierce lion who will destroy you. If you don't submit to Babylon, Babylon will destroy you. Verse 10. Isn't that, that makes it so much cooler. Verse 10. When Daniel knew that the document had been signed, you're not allowed to pray to any other god, any other man except the king. He went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as he had done previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and plea before his God, because it was a trap. They're obviously watching for him. Then they came near and said before the king concerning the injunction, O king, did you not sign an injunction that everyone who makes petition to any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing stands fast according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be revoked. That was in the story. I can't take it back. Then they answered and said before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. He just disobeys you over and over. He's broken the law. You know what we have to do now, King Darius. Then the king, when he heard these words, was much distressed and set his mind to deliver Daniel. He liked Daniel. He wanted to promote Daniel. He had no problem with Daniel. He did not expect this was going to happen to Daniel. And he labored till the sun went down to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, Know, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or ordinance that the king establishes can be changed. Hey, king, you can't look weak. You can't back out on this. This is what you said, and you said it was going to be irrevocable. You can't revoke it. Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, I love this, May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you. I'm going through this, but good luck, buddy. And a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. He is thrown in a pit with lions in it. And I wonder if you pick up on this. He was thrown into what is supposed to be his grave, and then they rolled a big stone over it so he couldn't get out. Now, I know chronologically I'm going backwards here, but this is an Easter story, isn't it? You see that? Here's the hero. We throw him into his grave, and we roll a big stone over that. Where do we hear of that later? Jesus crucified, thrown into the grave, and we roll a big stone over it so he can't get out. This is the Easter story, isn't it? Oh, I love it, because this is a story where everybody's expecting he gets thrown in the grave and he's mauled by lions, that Babylon, the superpower of the world, wins, that their values overtake the values of the people of God. Put a big stone over it. It is finished. It's over. But this is an Easter story. And what if we as Christians were the kind of people who had values and habits that allowed us to live in light of the Easter story? What if our hope was not in what our circumstances looked like? What if our decisions that became habits were not based around our circumstances, but our hope that we are people that live out the Easter story, the story of resurrection, the story that the grave doesn't win, the story that Babylon doesn't have victory, the story that the stone gets rolled back away and we come out? What if you built habits around that? What if that's the kind of thing you taught your children? What if that's the kind of thing you based your marriage around? That we are resurrection Easter people every Sunday, not one Sunday of the year. Easter story long before the first Easter. Daniel delivered to death, delivered to Babylon. Verse 19. Because this is kingdom against kingdom, people. Don't miss that. What kingdom are we building? What kingdom is your habits building? Verse 19. Then at break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. As he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? Then Daniel said to the king, nobody was expecting that line, by the way. You've been in with the hungry lions all night? He calls out. Darius was not expecting an answer. I hope you love that line. Then Daniel said, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth, and they have not harmed me because I was found blameless before him. And also before you, O king, I have done no harm. Then the king was exceedingly glad and commanded that Daniel be taken out of the den. So Daniel was taken out of the den, and no kind of harm was found on him because he had trusted in his God. And the king commanded, and those men, where'd your titles go, men? What about the satraps and the high officials and the... Those men who had maliciously accused Daniel were brought and cast into the den of lions, they, their children, and their wives. And before they reached the bottom of the den, the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces. Daniel comes out, the lions have not harmed me because I have not harmed anyone. And then those who represent Babylon are thrown into the lion's den, to the lions who represent Babylon, and before they hit the ground, they're crushed. What do we learn about that? Babylon destroys Babylon. Their accusation, their violence, their evil, their habits. And they said, we will conquer the world. You can't stand up against Babylon. Babylon will crush you. And what happens? Daniel walks out, but Babylon destroys Babylon. That all of their doing was actually their undoing. Babylon can't stand against itself. Can Babylon destroy the kingdom of God? Never. Easter story, hope, God's people walk out of the grave. But Babylon implodes on itself. Daniel walks out. Babylon cannot destroy us. Our God will protect us. Stay faithful. Daniel, this book being written to people who were in that exile and probably wondering, does God continue to save us? Does it continue to work? Or do we lose one day to Babylon? Do we lose to evil? Do we lose to oppression? Do we lose to all the bad things in the world? And here's the story in Daniel, not just about one man, about, you know, all his people. Babylon cannot destroy us. Our God will protect us. Stay faithful. And the only thing that Babylon is going to destroy is Babylon itself. It will not stand. Babylon becomes a metaphor in scripture oftentimes for evil, oppressive regimes. Not just, you know, one time in history, but, you know, kind of all evil. Evil will eventually be destroyed by itself. Verse 25. Then King Darius wrote to all the people, nations and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in all my royal dominion, people are to tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God, enduring forever. His kingdom shall never be destroyed. His dominion shall be to the end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. He who has saved Daniel from the power of the lions. Here's what happened. Darius comes out and he puts voice to Daniel's values. A kingdom that can't be destroyed, a God that can't be overcome, the one who shuts the mouths of lions, the one who endures forever. He sees that it's true. It's what Daniel knew. It's what he had incredible confidence in. He stakes his life in it and proved to be on the winning side. God wins out. Babylon doesn't. The lion doesn't win. We all have a story. And our stories, I'll tell you this, do not kind of go up and to the right all the time. Oh, it just got a little better and a little better and a little better and a little better. Be a boring story anyway. Daniel reminds us of that. His story reminds us of that. Sometimes our life looks nothing like we'd want it. We feel like we're in exile. We wonder where God is. We wonder why our life hasn't turned out as it is. We wonder why parenting is so hard and marriage is so hard and how we're going to put it all back together. This is a story for us, and it is an Easter story. Go back to your values. What do you really value? Don't stake your life on something that is not as strong as this, as a God who endures forever, a kingdom that can never be destroyed, a power and dominion that shall be to the end. That's Daniel's value system. And then notice this. How do you get so strong that you can continue to live that way? Go back to verse 10. This is when the edict had gone out. You can't pray to any God. He got down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God. Get this. As he had done previously. Another way we might say that. Just like always. Every day, three times a day, giving thanks to God, petitioning God. How did he get this strength to know that his kingdom would endure over all other kingdoms? How could he go up against the lion? How could he go up against Babylon? He prayed. Why? Just as always. Just as he had done previously. Do you remember what the king said to him when he's wishing him well? He said, man, I hope that the God who you serve continually will save you. Because it was Daniel's habit, based on his value system, to serve God continually, just as always. Decisions that became habits based on values. This is who I am. I pray every day to root me and decide who I am, who I am, who I am, until I don't even think about it, until there's an edict that says I can't do it. And what do? I go and I do it again, just as always. This roots me, it grounds me, it gives me confidence, it reminds me who I am. I don't stop and think, now should I do it because it's getting harder? Because I do it all the time, just as always. And the lion will not defeat me. Stronger habits make stronger people. Stronger habits make stronger families. Stronger habits make stronger marriages. Stronger habits make stronger friendships. Stronger habits make stronger. So listen today, turn your decisions into habits. What are your triggers? Find them. Make them up. What are the actions whenever there's this trigger? Whenever I go through a hard time, whenever I'm in a fight with my spouse, whenever I'm having trouble with my kid, whenever I wake up every day, what's your action based on your value? Find the rewards, celebrate them. Let it be a loop that lives in your life. Turn your decisions into habit. So here we go. What's one habit that you need to start? Listen, a couple of warnings. You're going to go out of here and you're going to try and change every habit in your life. You're going to fail. Let me give you a couple of warnings. Don't try to change everything at once. Start with one habit. What's one thing you need to start doing or stop doing? One thing as a parent, one thing as a husband, as a wife, one thing as a fiance, one thing as a friend, one thing in terms of your finances. What's one thing? Don't try and change everything at once. You'll get overwhelmed. Number two, don't beat yourself up when you mess up, because you'll mess up. You'll miss a day. You won't exercise this day. Oh, that was my habit. Don't kill yourself. Get back up and do it again the next day. This isn't about perfection. It's about a habit. Forge the habit. And so when you mess up, just forgive yourself. Find an accountability partner. Get back into it. Number three, don't make it complicated. Start with something really easy. Start with triggers that are really obvious. Start with kind of the things that may be forefront in your life. You can add habits through your whole life. I hope that you will. Start with one. Don't try and change everything at once. Don't beat yourself up when you fail. And don't make it so complicated. But today, this week, talk to your spouse. Talk to your kids. Talk to your boyfriend or girlfriend. Look at your bank statements. What's one habit that you need to start or one that you need to stop? Parents, I want to give you one resource. If you're looking and going, man, parenting's a big deal. I just know in our church, we have that demographic. There's a lot of us. We're young parents. We're trying to figure it out. I want to give you a resource because you might be sitting there thinking, hey, in our phase of life, what do we need for our kids? What do they really need? What do I need to impress upon my kids? Whether they're, right from birth, a couple years old, all the way up through high school, go to a website called justaphase.com. some great resources, some blogs, then some things that you can buy, books, flashcards that talk about what are the needs in different phases for different parents. If your kids are, you know, preschool, school, elementary school, high school, what are the longings that they have inside of you? What are some of the things you can do to provide habits for them that reinforce the most important messages? If you're a parent and you're just wondering, what would be some of the most powerful habits for our family and for parenting? Go to justaphase.com. Some of the stuff, there's free blogs and stuff. Some of it you can buy resources, but check that out. I hope it will help you as you try and figure out what are some of the rhythms you need as a family to enforce some of the most powerful messages as you raise children together. And then know this, your life will go up and down. You will face lions. You will face adversaries of circumstances and of people that will challenge your values, that will challenge the things that are most important in your life. There will be some steady themes in your life, whether they're on purpose or not. When you look back, no matter what you've done in your life or haven't done in your life, when you look back in 5 years, 10 years, when you look back at parenting small kids, when you look at back at your marriage, when you look back at the friendships that you formed, when you look back at your finances, what do you want to see about your life? And what, when you look back, will you want to be able to say, and that was just like always. Whatever we went through, whatever we did, those things, those habits were just like always. And that's why we're where we're at today. So Heavenly Father, we thank you for this powerful example. Thank you for your kingdom that cannot be overcome, a kingdom that cannot be destroyed. Thank you, God, that even though we face lions, that we face opposition, that we face things that disrupt our lives, that our circumstances go up and down, that you are constant. God, I pray that today we would have people making decisions to place their value on you ultimately in their life. God, I pray that in that they would see transformation. That in places where, even right now, they are wavering to make decisions that are based on values that are leading them in dangerous or unhealthy places, God, would you show them that following you is always better, that you always win the day, that you always bring us to a better place. God, help us to be people who are courageous in making decisions that match those values. And then more than that, God, would you help us to forge habits, mainstays in our life, that root us and found our lives and our families and our marriages and our finances and our friendship upon you, so that even if we're thrown to the lions, we know that you cannot be overcome, and that even if our lives are difficult and we struggle, we could look back and say, no matter what was going on, you were there for us just like always, and we would see habits in our lives that bring so much fruit. As we pray ultimately for your kingdom to come and your will be done in our lives and in our world. And in Christ's name, amen.